Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello there, a very good afternoon. You're welcome to Liveline. It's John Cook with you until 3 o'clock, and I do hope you're well. It's 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch, and 087-484-8888. And already many of you getting in touch about Dolly Parton, who's postponed her first Las Vegas residency in 32 years, citing health challenges. Carol, good afternoon.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm good, thank you.
Disappointed with this news?
Well, I am and I am, and I'm kind of disappointed for the fans and stuff that would have been going to see her. But I'm also not disappointed because, like, Dolly is a workhorse. So if she's stopping, there's a really good reason why she's doing it, because she wouldn't postpone lightly.
That's for sure. And what she said on Instagram is that, as many of you know, I've been dealing with some health challenges and my doctors are telling me I need to undergo some procedures. She joked with them, it must be time for my 100,000 mile checkup, although it's not the usual trip to see my plastic surgeon. She's still in good spirits about it all, Carol. That's a good sign.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not her half a million mile checkup, to be honest with you, with everything that she's done. You know, because she never stops, really. Like, she puts you to shame, really, you know.
Uh-huh. Have you always loved Dolly, Carol?
Yeah, I have. Like, I've been listening to Dolly since I was a kid, and I love her music. Like, I love her ability to tell a story, whether it's through her music or her books or whatever she happens to be doing at the time, you know. Yeah, like, I was 40 a few years ago, many years ago now. I shouldn't be saying that, really, give away my age. But anyway, I went to Dollywood for my 40th birthday. I thought this is the perfect time to do that, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it's a few years ago now. But it's, honest to God, a theme park like no other. You know, like, its setting is like a big old-fashioned country town, but with roller coasters.
I was just going to say, Carol, I have family in Tennessee and I've been to Dollywood.
Oh, have you?
But I have to confess, me and my kids were there for the roller coasters, or they were anyway, and I wasn't able for some of them. I don't think people realise how much is going on at Dollywood. It's not just about the music and Dolly herself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, it's only the rides and all are only a part of it, you know. Look, you've been, so you've seen that every part you go in is kind of different, you know. But, like, I had a really good experience at the time I went.
Sure, tell us.
You know, the day I visited, Dolly was actually there. So they don't announce it when she's going to be there. But what happened was, we were paying for the tickets at the kiosk, and the lady serving us, she was just kind of going about her job, and she says, where are you from? I think they've just put it in, you know, on the computer. And we said, we're from Ireland. And then she got excited that we were from Ireland. You know, maybe they don't get a lot of Irish people there or something. But anyway, she leaned over and she whispered to us, Dolly's inside today. And she said, look, what you do is you look out for the staff. They're going to tape off the street when she's coming. That means she's on her way. So, of course, we're going around enjoying everything. But at the same time, we're keeping an eye out, you know, all the time. So we're in the shop when we saw them doing it. So we ran out of the shop, dropped the baskets, ran outside, and craning the heads, and Dolly was coming up the street in an open-top car. You know, so we were delighted.
Wow, you must have been so excited.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. You know, I can't even describe to how excited I was. In fact, like, I'm a big Dolly fan, and I probably unusually couldn't speak. I was so excited, you know. But the best thing was, Dolly was coming up the street in an open-top car. Now, this was in the month of May, and Dolly was going to be playing a concert in what we used to call the Pint in Dublin in the September.
Mm-hmm.
So as the car was passing by, my other half roared, see you in Dublin, Dolly. Dolly whipped around, pointed at us and gave us a big wave. Couldn't believe it. Uh-huh. I nearly fell over at that stage, you know.
How did she look, Carol? She's all about the appearance, of course. She didn't disappoint, I'd say.
Oh, God, she was her usual iconic self, you know. She's there in the sequins and sparkling and the big sunglasses and looking really regal in the back seat, you know. So, yeah, you're right. She didn't disappoint. She was the usual, like, you know, what you expect to see when you think of Dolly, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it must have made your day and your visit, I'd say, Carol.
Oh, God, it did. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when we went to the concert in the September, she's on the stage and halfway through the concert, she says, have any of you been to Dollywood? And then she says, well, I know some of you have. But unfortunately, she got heckled then, so I didn't hear the rest of it.
Heckled?
You know?
Who was heckling her?
But like, oh, I thought they were just shouting up something like, I love you, Dolly, or
right,
whatever. But
right.
Anyway,
ah, that's
it
good. That's
the
good
flow.
Nature.
I was
that's
hoping
okay.
to get a mention.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, another kind of funny story, well, funny as a mad story, is where Dollywood is located, you'll know this yourself, is Pigeon Forge.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, it's just a big highway. You know, it's just a big highway with trams going up and down it and cars, obviously. But all the industry around it, like such as shops and restaurants and all that, they're all there because of Dollywood. They all sprang up there.
Yeah.
And they have their businesses because of Dollywood. And they used to hold an annual Dolly Homecoming Parade. It's sort of like our St. Patrick's Day Parade, you know. It has the marching bands, the majorettes, the music, the floats and so on.
But this is all about Dolly.
So, yes, it was. It was all about Dolly. So we found out about that. And we went up to some part of the highway. We sat on the side of the road for hours in the heat waiting for it to start. So, because, you know, they're the same mass crowds that you get here for Patrick's Day in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we waited for ages, so they're all coming along. And eventually, Dolly comes along and this enormous float shaped like a plane. And she's just waving at everybody. You know, like she's the Grand Marshal of the whole parade. And she did that for 32 years now. I think she stepped down from it now.
Mm-hmm.
But like it was, I think we'd sunburn and everything. But like it was really worth it just to see this.
Have you a favourite?
Sorry, go on.
No, you go on. What were you going to say?
Say, what other celebrity could you think of, or singer, actor, whoever, that they would have a parade for them and a theme park for them? So it just shows you how iconic she is.
Uh-huh, that's for sure. And she seems to love it and love the fans and being part of it as well. I was going to ask you, which of her songs do you love most, Carol?
Well, I love a lot of them, but my personal favourite would be her song My Tennessee Mountain Home, because it really, if you listen to the lyrics, it just portrays, you know, that she's, you know, having like a Sunday afternoon, hanging out with her family and a teenage boyfriend. Obviously, she was a teenage at the time too. And just like enjoying the homestead and things like that. It's just really simple, but really descriptive at the same mm-hmm. time.
Can you sing it, Carol?
Oh, God, no. Oh, no, I'm an awful singer anyway, but I have a stinking cold. So
oh, no, you're clearing your throat there. You're getting ready for us. We'll give you a hand.
No, I really couldn't.
Don't be shy, Carol. I'm sure you're humming along at least.
Honeysuckle vine clings to the fence along the lane. Their fragrance makes the summer wind so sweet. And on a distant hilltop, an eagle spreads its wings. And a songbird on a fence post sings a melody.
Carol, you're clearing your throat there again. I think you're getting ready for it. You must.
In my Tennessee mountain home.
Go on,
now,
Carol.
That's as much as you're going to get off me, John.
I bet you sing it in the shower at least, do you?
Well, yeah, but like there's nobody, at least there's no danger of me clearing the place when I'm in the shower, you know.
Don't worry, you won't clear the place here. You're just chatting to me. Don't worry, we won't tell everyone else. I think they enjoyed it anyway, Carol. Fair play. Dolly Parton is saying she's postponing concerts because she won't be able to rehearse and put on the show she wants her fans to see. Her statement says, you guys pay good money to see me perform and I want to be at my best for you. What do you think, Carol? I suppose you're hoping she'll be back bigger and better.
Yeah, well, like I'll err on the side of caution and say I hope she does whatever is the best thing for her.
Yeah.
Like she has kind of slowed down in some ways in the last few years. Like she's stopped touring. You know, she did that a few years ago. Sorry.
You're okay.
You know, and she's Like, but at the same time, like, she's gone hell for leather putting out products. Like, if you're in America, you can buy perfume, you can buy cookware, you can buy a coat for your dog, you can buy loads of stuff with the Dolly Varton trademark on it.
She's a shrewd businesswoman, that's for sure. Yeah. Take your time. Sorry, take your time, Carol, there. I have made your cold worse by making you sing there. So I tell you what, we're going to need another song for you in a moment. So take a quick rest if you want to warm up on that one. She's 79, I should point out, too, and a great advertisement for it, too, because lots of listeners want to get in touch on this. 51551 for your text if you want to join us. Alwyn is with us in just a moment. But first, let's have a quick listen to this.
I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind.
Are you singing, Alwyn?
Yeah, I'll just...
Go for brilliant. It, go for
brilliant,
it.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I will not torture people's ears, I've been through enough. In my head, amazing. In reality, not so.
Oh, but we're all good singers in our head, nails, yeah.
Like that song, she made that song up with her acrylic nails just playing the beat, and that, what she done for nail extensions.
I was just going to say, isn't that it? Because you're listening to the sound of the typewriter, and also, like, is it her filing nails or what?
It's her acrylic nails. So
help me explain that one, or explain it to me, please, because it's actually her nails that made the sound that sounded like she was tapping the typewriter. Was that it?
Yeah, so when you heard that, once you know that, that's a very visual, it's a very visual thing, and it did inspire. I think once you know that, and you ever get nail extensions, that's what you do. You tap your nails. She's done a lot for nail bars and wigs and everything. She's amazing.
She's an inspirational woman. There are many people tapping their nails and their toes and everything else. I'm sure they're now listening to that.
It's the one song that gets everybody up.
It certainly does. I think that's one of the reasons so many people love her as well. It goes to show you how talented and musically creative she was too, or is, isn't she?
You know, whether you're not into her music or into her style, but her inspiration, her business, just being a woman, so good. If you're a small, busty woman, she's the one woman that tells you to have confidence.
That's for sure. And very proud of us. Very proud of us.
Very proud of us.
Alwyn, how long are you a fan?
Since I was probably about 7 or 8, I was in my granny and auntie used to babysit myself and my twin sister. And we were up loud step late and 9 to 5 came on. And it was the first time I fell in love with Dolly Parton, and since then all her 70s fabulousness of clothes and her disco, and then the 80s all her fashion from Bob Mackie, just, and her hair and her film, like the best little hair house in Texas, amazing film, her comic wit, just so good. Mm-hmm. All the right up to her rock star album now is so good.
Have you seen her, Alwyn?
I got to see her in Sydney. It was when she did probably the world tour, and she did Ireland as well. I got to see her. It was one big gig, and it was amazing. It was very professional. It was a lot of money, but it was very professional. Not a fault. It was the best gig from start to finish. So she has postponed this gig, but you know, she hasn't cancelled it. She'll definitely do another. Whether she'll do a world tour again, maybe not, but that's okay. The world's small, people can travel. But her, if you ever get a chance to see her, it's definitely money worth it.
It's one of those bucket list concerts, isn't it?
She has everybody on the stage, amazing musicians. Her bluegrass is amazing. She can play so many instruments. Her banjo playing's to die for. She's so good with those nails. And just, you know, very, very good performance. So, yeah, definitely don't write her off yet, but your health is your health, and your health's your wealth, and you know, we want, you know, so people have got tickets, obviously they've got tickets and they've got flights booked to Vegas and they've got hotel rooms. They're still gonna go, they're still gonna have fun, they'll still, you know, they'll walk around and meet other Dolly fans that are over there, and they'll love it. Mm-hmm. It'll never be as good as Dolly Day in the Stall. When the Stall did Dolly Day.
I was just going to ask you about
time.
That 51551, because I think Carol and Alwyn, you were both in the Stall for the. Remind us of what Dolly Day was.
Carol, you know yourself, you'll never have another day like that. It was amazing. Man, woman, dog, child, had balloons. I've never seen so many blow up balloons in my life. So many wigs. There was a 7-year old with balloons down his top with a wee wig on beside his granddad with a full on mustache and a wig on. I mean, it was amazing. She sent over Eugene from Dollywood. He was a cracker. He was just so good. He went with it. Isn't that right, Carol?
Yeah, I met him there. He met everybody, but it was just amazing. The whole town, shop window done up in Dolly gear and everybody done up in the blonde wigs, and the atmosphere was just amazing. It was just an
good
amazing
fun.
Event.
Everyone's walking down the street going, hi, Dolly.
Yeah.
And they raised so much money. It was so good.
Afterwards.
Like, they raised so much money. Yeah, good crack. Good crack in the town.
Sounds like a good night, a good weekend, Carol, as well there. You fond memories of that?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, as somebody, and you know yourself, Alwyn, that you're a big fan, like, it was just, like, going to, probably using the wrong word, but a mecca if you're a Dolly fan, because she was just everywhere. And it was just
everywhere.
Fantastic.
Okay. And you mentioned the great money as well there, Alwyn. Yeah, more of it. And great fundraising for the Kerry Hospice and the Comfort for Chemo Kerry. That really was a great event. And I think Dolly Parton was proud of too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was big. And she did a lot. She did interviews for it. It got cancelled because of COVID. So they did it at home. And they did, like, everyone got dressed up at home and they did the videos, which were so funny, so good. So it was like 2 years of it. And then you had the real one where everybody could go and be there, you know. So it's brilliant. It was really good.
Well, you know, guys, the big moment on Liveline when Dolly spoke to Liveline as well last year. Who knows? She might be listening. Alwyn, you're sending out your good wishes today to Dolly.
Good wishes. Good Dolly sparkle as she gives to us all. You're all sending it back to her.
And Carol, you think she's entitled to a rest and hope it goes well.
Oh, absolutely. You can't keep a good woman down, John. You know, Dolly will be back even bigger than before, if that's possible.
Uh-huh. 51551. Thanks very much for getting in touch with us, Carol and Alwyn and everyone who's getting
in touch.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And 51551, because we're still looking for your budget issues as well ahead of the big budget announcements next Tuesday. Liveline at rte.ie as well if you want to get in touch. Because lots of you getting in on various issues, including childcare. John, good afternoon to you.
Hey, how's it going?
How old is your daughter now?
She just went a year old 2 weeks ago.
Very good. She's getting on well?
Yes, she's lying. Yeah, it's getting on great.
Good stuff. I'm glad. And all well with the family, John, or things have gone well, but not so well in terms of trying to find childcare. What's happened?
That's been a disaster. I suppose since the first scan at 12 weeks, we've had her on a couple of waiting lists, and the closest we are on any of them is 18th.
18th on a waiting list. And how did it start? You knew when you were expecting your daughter that you needed to start planning ahead.
We thought we were kind of, quick to do it, like, straight after the first scan. But now there's waiting lists over a year. So I guess people even thinking of conceiving are putting down names and stuff like that. So, when I got onto the creche last time, they just said, look, it's not going to be anytime soon. So now we have to try and figure out an alternative, really.
So let me get this straight. From your first scan during pregnancy, you and your wife or partner are thinking, we better get our names down somewhere.
Yeah, because we knew it was bad and tight and stuff, but we were like, she'd have a maternity leave and then she was going to take parents' leave, and now I'm on parents' leave, and we're like, that's carrying us quite far, but there's still no it looks like we're going to have to try and juggle like a childminder and, a mix of taking days off and seeing what we can do.
And you mentioned that people, even from the point of thinking they're planning a family, they haven't even got pregnant yet, they're thinking about childcare or ringing a creche.
Yeah, 100%. And I can't vouch for this being true with the Chinese whispers, but I'm hearing of 2 year waiting list. And it's like, is that people that are like, maybe next year we'll do? I think it's a lot of preemptive putting names down just in case because people know the situation.
We'd be interested to hear from listeners or childcare providers on that as well. 51551 if you want to get in touch. How are you coping with work and childcare then, John, if you don't have any?
Yeah, it's a bit of a... We're looking at local childminders. We found that this site Mind Me. But it's really not ideal and it's a whole lot more expensive than a creche. Like, you're probably looking at 100 quid a day, really.
So maybe 500 a week if you need full-time childcare, is that it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, it's very costly.
I don't know how long-term that is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it really is.
Uh-huh. Are you worried?
I am, yeah. It's really crept up on... Like, I wasn't planning initially on taking this parents' leave time because you only get the €289 when you're on it. Like, you're not getting your full work wages or anything. So it's definitely eating into everything.
You're hoping for some relief. We've seen childcare credits in the budgets previously. We're expecting talk of it as well next Tuesday. But you need childcare places or what would you say to the government, John?
I really don't know. I feel like it's maybe a bit late for us, but I know there's all these estates popping up and part of what they're doing is they have to have, they build creche facilities and all, but they don't have to staff them. So I've heard of like this new estates popping up and there's a creche there, but it's not open.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just, I don't know if they need to get a bit more lax on, I don't know if everything's too heavily regulated, if that's what the problem is, but it's like as for preschool, they seem to, there's no waiting list.
Okay.
But for this, this is huge.
John, will you both be able to keep working in your house if this continues? If you said at 1 year, 1 year old for your daughter, it might be too late to get childcare.
I'm not really sure what we'll do, to be honest.
Okay.
We're still trying to figure things out.
Okay. John, thanks very much for sharing your story with us. And it's frustrating and worrying as well. But one that I think could be reflected by lots of other people out there too. If you want to get in touch, it's 51551 for your experience. Katrina, good afternoon to you.
John, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us on Liveline.
So welcome.
You are thinking about the budget as well. What's on your wish list?
Well, really, I suppose I am just thinking of our local community and how initiatives such as the Vacant Property Refurbishment Grant have helped so many people reimagine derelict properties, and it's breathing new life into the community. And I just see how great an initiative that was by local properties, and that such initiatives could be rolled out to a greater extent, maybe something like the Living Over the Shop scheme as was, and maybe the reduction in rates and VAT for retailers and hospitality.
Okay, you mentioned
that.
Sorry, Katrina, you mentioned a lot of things there. And when you're talking about the derelict and the vacant property grants, we know they got higher as well from their initial introduction. Do you see them working where you are?
Yes, it's absolutely tangible. It's visible in every townland, in places like rural Donegal. And I can see how it is breathing new life into rural areas where my understanding is that you stick to the initial original footprint and then you're free to add on your Dermot Bannon-style extension, or you can reimagine the new extension in whatever way you wish.
Subject
you can
to planning,
property.
Of course. But what I mean is you can see older houses there, houses that were maybe let go, maybe nobody living in them for the past number of years. You're seeing them being refurbished or new life in them.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful to see it. And it's amazing when you see an old building, a cottage or a house reimagined in a new, fresh way and brought into the next century, basically.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. It's lovely to see life back in houses like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to see waste in a housing crisis.
Yes.
People have suggested the grants on offer might drive up the prices of those houses too, Katrina. Have you seen or heard of that?
I suppose it's going to be a more attractive proposition now, the derelict cottage or the derelict property. But those places weren't typically selling well anyway, so maybe it's just using up what is there what's there already before having to build on a greenfield site. So I don't think it's necessarily driving up the properties, but there is, it is creating a market now possibly for derelict cottages or houses that really wasn't there to the same extent.
Something I note as well, Katrina, you said you're seeing it in rural communities as well. Is it working in towns, in our main streets where we had vacant or derelict buildings as well?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the most heartening things to see, where so many main streets, and maybe in so many suburbs too, in places like Dublin, that there's new life being breathed into main streets, which were basically dying. And through this facility, that an increasing number of people are seeing it as an attractive proposition to live within the boundaries of a village or town. Mm-hmm. And that you have that footfall, happening, and it's not just, it's after shops close. It's a more sustainable way of living too for people. They're not relying on public transport as much. They're not relying on their car as much. And I think they're in a better position to support local retailers and hospitality that maybe could benefit from the same types of supports.
Yeah, they need.
I think, like, for example, rates are totally unsustainable for small retailers and hospitality industry in Ireland. I mean, my understanding is that when your property is inspected for rates, your whole property, regardless of how much you're using for the actual business, is taken into account. Mm-hmm.
Are you in business yourself, and Katrina?
No, I'm not, but my husband is, but he's in the service industry. He is he's actually an auctioneer and estate agent, but I'm not talking about him in particular. I'm talking about small independent retailers and hospitality industry who have, thanks to them taking a punt on business in Ireland, they're actually increasing the footfall on a daily basis in small towns and villages, and even in suburbs of larger cities.
Okay, Katrina, I see what you're saying. So you want more flexibility on rates. Well, that's to local authorities, of course. But as regards government and the budget, you're saying more of those derelict and vacant property grants, or maybe more in that line in getting more people back into our streets and our villages.
Yes, and I just see that's an initiative that has really worked so well.
Good to hear.
And other supports, for example, the reduction of the VAT rate of 13.5% for hospitality. There's talk of it being reduced to 9%. I mean, that's badly needed for small businesses, for retailers and hospitality who are providing such a service for existing communities, for new communities, and for visitors alike.
And we'd like to hear from more of them. 51551. Thank you, Katrina. James, good afternoon to you.
Hello, John. Nice to speak to you.
And to you as well. What's on your budget wish list, please?
Well, John, I thought we lived in a republic where all citizens were treated equally. But sadly, that is not the case in terms of our inheritance tax rules for all childless citizens. We're not able to pass the same amount of our fully taxed assets to our loved ones as that afforded to parents.
What's your own situation, James?
Well, I'm married to Sheila, and we got married a little bit later in life. We don't have children of our own, but we certainly do have a family of loved ones, and we are not able to pass the same amount of our fully taxed assets to our loved ones as that afforded to parents. Mm-hmm. Parents can pass 400,000 tax-free to each of their children. Thankfully, we're obviously pleased about that. But myself and Sheila, we can only pass, wait for this, John, 40,000 tax-free to each of our loved ones. Mm-hmm. That's 10 times less. So this is fundamentally a discriminatory issue. It affects over 1 million childless citizens in this country. Any person listening today who's childless, their loved ones, when they pass away, they will not be able to pass the same amount of their fully taxed assets as that enjoyed by other parents. Mm-hmm. I'm part of a campaign group called EDIT, End Discrimination and Inheritance Tax, and we have lobbied the government, particularly over the last year. But unfortunately, we do not think there will be any changes next Tuesday. Pascal Donoghue, the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, Jack Chambers, our Minister for Equality, Norma Foley, they seem determined to continue this grotesque discrimination against all childless citizens.
You think it's grotesque, James. You say it's grotesque. They would say it's... You're talking about nieces and nephews and siblings here that can inherit up to €40,000 tax-free. They will point out that's gone up from a previous figure of €32,500. But you're talking about not having the same rights in terms of giving up to €400,000 to a child. Right. It's your nieces and nephews or siblings you want to be able to give to without tax or what? Because that's a huge bonus, isn't it, if they were to inherit that much from you and maybe from a parent as well?
No, we just want the same rules as all other citizens. We're not asking for any favourable treatment. We just want to enjoy the same rules as parents. So, for example, John, if we take a public representative, just for example, the Taoiseach, he thankfully can pass 1.2 million of his assets tax-free to his three children. He can also pass 40,000 to each of his nephews, nieces, brothers and sisters and any future grandchildren. Okay, myself, my wife, because we do not have children, we are only permitted to pass 40,000 to each of our loved ones, and it is not at all certain either, John, that a childless person may automatically want to pass their assets to a family member. You may have a very good friend, a carer, a neighbour who has done more for you perhaps throughout your lifetime than any family member. In which case, you get to pass. Wait for this, John. 20,000 tax-free. Mm-hmm. So the rules are skewed against all childless citizens in this country, and we have put this to the, as I say, to our most senior public representatives over the course of the last year. We gave a presentation in the Dáil in May that was very well attended by TDs, senators and government officials. But unfortunately, Pascal Donoghue and the Taoiseach and Simon Harris and Norma Foley, our Minister for Equality, they have not answered the discriminatory concerns. That it is fundamentally an issue of discrimination. We either live in a republic where all citizens are treated equally or we don't. But unfortunately, John, for every single person listening to Liveline today who passes away with any more than 40,000, simply because they are childless, this government is saying we will take 33% above anything above 40,000. Now, All we are asking is for our most senior public representatives, and we're also asking now the three presidential candidates who will be looking after our constitution to obviously to give their views on this matter. Mm-hmm.
I hear you. I hear you, James, because you feel very passionately about this, I know. And the government will point out they have raised these thresholds already. They'll point out as well, James, they've got to raise tax from somewhere. And could we have a scenario then, if the rules were changed the way you want them changed, that, for example, and we don't want to personalise it about anyone in particular, but that you or me could inherit up to €400,000 from a parent and from a generous aunt or uncle as well. And wouldn't that be a huge windfall in the eyes of the state as well, and one that most people would not be lucky enough to benefit from. We need tax to look after those and the more vulnerable in society as well, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. We obviously do, but the rules have to be fair for everybody. It's fundamentally about discrimination. So, for example, we have obviously made our proposals to the government, so we could have a lifetime threshold. So, for example, the government can dictate what that lifetime threshold is for every citizen. And regardless whether that threshold comes from a parent or from an uncle, a nephew, a niece, that would be fine. You know, okay. Obviously the government has to dictate the rules.
I see what you're saying.
The rules have to be, you know, so we have come up with our proposals.
Yep.
This doesn't make any sense. We have a housing crisis for younger people in this country.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying, James. Unfortunately, we're losing your line there, but I have got your point loud and clear. It's liveline at rte.ie. James pointing out as well, another idea would be that he or I, in that scenario I painted there, could be subject to that limit. I think he means of 400,000, regardless of whether it came from a parent or an uncle or a friend or an aunt or whoever. If it's an issue that you're interested in talking to us about, if it's one that affects you or other budget issues, 51551 for your text, please.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And 51551 for your texts ahead of next Tuesday's budget announcements in Dáil Éireann. I want to focus today on something very different, though, very significant and a very poignant event that is also taking place next Tuesday, October 7th. It's the third anniversary of the Chrysler tragedy, which claimed the lives of 10 people and injured others after a shocking explosion ripped through the local shop and service station in the Donegal village. 3 years on, bereaved families met with Gardaí last night for an update on their inquiries, to be told a primary investigation file has now been forwarded to the Director of Public Prosecutions. And this followed a meeting of Donegal County Council yesterday, where a motion was passed calling on the executive to make efforts to buy the site of the Chrysler explosion through negotiation or compulsory purchase, and to discuss then and consult with the families on how to design a memorial garden going forward. It's 51551 if you want to get in touch with us on this. Donna Harper, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
And thanks for joining us on Liveline as well, Donna. You met, among other families, with the Gardaí last night for an update. They tell us they continue to update you, and you were told that at last, 3 years on, there is a file going to the DPP. How do you feel about that?
I was absolutely delighted to hear that last night. It's been 3 years now, and the 7th of October now. So it was great to hear that. It was emotional to hear that at the same time, because it's been a long time waiting.
Mm-hmm. A long time waiting, as you say. The Gardaí tell us that the families of 10 people who died in the local community and their thoughts as the third anniversary approaches. They say their investigation into the explosion has generated 1,000 statements and 750 reports, as well as 7 arrests, including 6 males and 1 female, and their primary investigation file has been forwarded to the Director of Public Prosecutions. The victims' families continue to be supported by family liaison officers. All the while, Donna, you and your husband Hugh and your family are thinking of your daughter, Leona. Will you remind us about her, please?
Leona was only 14 years old when she died. On the 9th of January this year, Leona would be turning 18. So it's been very, very difficult without her. There's never a day goes by that you don't think of what happened, and never a minute goes by that you don't think on your daughter. Leona was very focused. She knew exactly what she wanted out of life for being such a young girl. Mm-hmm. She was very much into sports. Loved her farming and her car shows, and as much as that has been a very girly girl, loved dancing and her clothes and her fashion. She's full of life, and that life was just taken and stolen away from our Leona and from us as a family.
Mm-hmm. Leona was hanging out with friends on a sleepover in Chrysler when this devastating tragedy struck.
Yes, Leona went over. We live in Letterkenny ourselves, and Leona went over to her friend in Chrysler. On that day, Leona had went over on the school bus with her friend. I had rang Leona, and as I rang Leona, I had a conversation with her while she was walking into the shop. And that's something I'll always hold on to. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a mother, and my last words to my daughter was, have a great time, Leona. I love you and I ring you tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Minutes later, I was told then that my daughter was involved in an accident at that time. Mm-hmm. I thought initially that she must have got knocked down or something. I didn't know. It was actually my youngest son that got that call. Obviously, I had went straight to Chrysler, and halfway to Chrysler then, I had realised it wasn't an accident at all. It was an explosion. Obviously, I had stood then in Kuisla for 24 hours waiting for my daughter to be found. And I will always always be very grateful for all of the emergency services, that even the emergency services that came from Northern Ireland, and all of the local people as well that put their own lives at risk trying to help everybody on that day.
I remember their efforts. I think that Leona was the last to be recovered from Chrysla and the explosion site.
She was, yeah. Leona was the very last out. It was a very, very hard day. It's a day that I'll never forget. You know, it stays with me every single day, and it will be for the rest of my life. But I have to say big praise to all of the guys down there and the women and everybody that helped on that day. They worked so professionally and they did amazing work.
You mentioned Leona should have been turning 18. Are you always thinking that, Donna, as a parent, what should have been?
Oh, always, every day, and always will for the rest of my life. Even when it was Leona's 16th birthday, that was a very, very difficult day. Especially now coming up to her 18th, because this year alone, Leona should have been making her prom. She should have been leaving school. She should have been going to the next chapter in her own life. I, as a mother, should have been out picking a prom dress with my daughter and doing the things that a mother does with her daughter. But I will never have that. Leona was my only daughter, and I will never, ever have that. And it just breaks my heart.
It must be very hard. You see her friends getting on with their lives or celebrating these milestones, as you said.
That is very difficult. But I have to say that Leona has an amazing bunch of friends, male and female. And they have, for young kids, they have been extremely supportive to me and my husband and my two boys. They've always kept in touch, and you know, it actually means a lot. And I'm glad for them that they're able to move on with their lives, because they have to, as their lives move forward, they have to be able to move forward with that.
It's nice to know they're thinking of you, though, and Leona as well. And I'm sure she'll always play a special part in their lives and their memories as well. You mentioned how long this process has been, and I mentioned the Garda investigations, and they tell us now that this file gone to the DPP, and we will respect that and leave it to them. But the longer this has gone on, you called for a public inquiry as well from government, who have pointed out each time that the Garda investigation needs to take priority, and the investigations that are ongoing by the Health and Safety Authority and the Commission for Regulation of Utilities has to keep going as well. What does that do to your family, Donna, though, and your grief? It's something we were talking about a lot on Liveline in recent weeks, how you grieve someone. And I suppose there's no set way, but when there are so many stages to get through, and you must be exhausted from it, I'd say, at this stage.
Yeah, it definitely is. It is hard, and it is very hard to grieve and to try and move on in some kind of small way. Because for me and my family, it's like we're still back there on the 7th of October 2022, because there's so much we have to go through as a family. We have inquests and everything to go through yet. It will be 3 years now next week. Fight has gone to DPP. Then we need to wait on that to come back as well. So we don't know how long that's going to be. We have called for the public inquiry. And the reason that we have called for that is because I want to know what happened that day on the 7th of October that claimed 10 people's lives. I want to know the truth, and I want to know what happened and why it happened. And it never, ever should happen again. There has to be a public inquiry, because that is where the truth is going to come out. The guards can only do so much in their investigation, of course. So, again, I'm on your show, and I will plead with the government again to please give us that public inquiry that we so desperately need.
And I have put your queries and your concerns and your requests to the Minister for Justice and to his department as well. We're awaiting a response, but I am mindful we've been told many times the various stages will have to be followed through in terms of allowing the other investigations to continue. It's hard, Donna.
It is. It's very, very hard. It's very difficult. Even if we got some kind of a commitment from the government to even when the garage are finished their investigation, if they would still come up and say, well, we will give you your inquiry after that and we will be able to get the truth for you. But so far, we're not getting that. That's what we're asking for.
Donna, thanks for telling us about Leona again, and my best to Hugh and to your boys as well. And stay with us if you can. Áine Flanagan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Thanks for talking to me on Liveline today as well. Will you remind us, Áine, because I think it's important that we remember the victims here and the desperate suffering that you've been through as well. Will you remind us of Bob and little Shauna, please?
Well, Bob was from Zimbabwe and my partner, and Shauna was my only daughter. She was five. And they were found in each other's arms on the day of the explosion. That's how they were found. And it's been a very long, 3 years, but we got good reassurance from the guards that everything is on track. And as you know, the primary file has gone to the DPP. And I think the guards are leaving no stone unturned, and they have experts worldwide and in Ireland assisting them. And really, I look forward to the DPP's deliberations over the next few months and getting justice for our loved ones. But Shauna was a bubbly little girl, full of life, full of love. Bob was a strong man, loved his daughter, protected her in life and in death. So it's been a very tough 3 years for us, the families. And as Donna has said, you know, we would like an inquiry running alongside the Garda investigation, but the government has said no to that. And I hope that they do decide to allow that to go ahead as well, because all we want is the truth.
You want answers, but
yes.
Nothing will make your grief any easier on you, I'm sure. Donna mentioned there the milestones and the prom dress. You, I'm sure, Shauna, always think about Shauna and what she should have been doing.
Well, Shauna would be making her communion next May, so that is going to be a very hard milestone. But birthdays, Christmas, you know, all the celebrations that we have in Ireland, they're not here.
Do you still see her little friends go by, Áine, and think about that?
I do. I see all our friends because I'm right across the road from the school, and they always call me Shauna's mama, and because I'm with the dog, and they talk to me, and they're full of life, and they talk about Shauna still, because it's had a huge impact, as you know, on the community, on the children, on everybody here.
Of course.
It's difficult. But we just want justice. So I'm looking forward to the DPP's deliberations over the next few months, as I've said, to get justice.
And I'm glad to hear you feel that there's some progress or something happening at last as well.
Yes.
Does it feel for you, Áine, like grief is on hold sometimes, or that there's just so many stages you still have to go through?
Well, there is so many stages. Like as Donna said, we have to go through the inquests. We have to go through possible court. You know, it's ongoing. The Garda meetings have been ongoing. The wait. I think the waiting for deliberations is incredibly difficult for all of us, all the families. But, you know, we have a lot of fight, and we'll continue to fight for our loved ones. We will never give up for justice.
I know you'll, well, never get over the death of a child or your partner, as you say, but as you say, you'll never give up. You want them to be remembered, obviously.
I want them to be remembered, but I'm living my life in their eyes and for them.
Áine, thanks very much for speaking to us as well, and stay with us if you can. 51551 if listeners want to get in touch with us today. Anne-Marie Boyle, good afternoon to you as well.
Good morning, or good afternoon, sorry.
That's all right, Anne-Marie. Thanks very much for joining us as well. Anne-Marie, will you remind us about your sister Catherine, please, and her son James?
Oh, Catherine was our youngest sibling. She was just 39 years old. Went to the shop just one day to get groceries and supplies for my mum, picked up her pension, collected her pension, went into the shop and was doing the shopping, and my mother heard an explosion. She heard a bang, wasn't quite sure what it was, and then she started receiving calls. And Catherine was a very chatty, chatty person, and Mum said, Mum was minding her little girl, Sinead, and she happened to say just minutes before it, wonder where your mum is, Sinead, she'll be that busy talking. Mum was waiting for her cigarettes to come home. She was
right.
A chain smoker, God rest her, and
it's the simple things, isn't it, Anne-Marie? That's why this was just so devastating and seems so random and so cruel to so many. If I recall correctly, Catherine was in the shop or the post office queue. James had just got off the school bus or was just coming home from school. Is that right?
Catherine had James. She was waiting for James and Kilmacrennan from the school bus. He had just started secondary school. And she was delayed and going down home because she was waiting on her parcel coming for James. And she got a text to say it would be delayed. So she waited, and then she collected James from the school bus. Went home, down to Mum's, and James would not normally go to the shop, but this day he said he wanted to go down with his mum, Catherine. And so my mother said just leave Sinead, her little girl, at the house, and James went on with his mum to the shop, full of life, looking forward to the weekend, spending it again at Granny's, going down getting his supplies, and that was the last that we've seen. Full of life.
And I'm so sorry for your loss, Anne-Marie, and to all your family as well, and to all of the bereaved families and the victims of what happened in Chrysler in Donegal. I know you'll never forget them. How difficult is another anniversary?
Very difficult. It's when we seem to be getting on top of things, something else comes up. And we know that this is going to be a long process, and we are thankful to the guards and our family liaison officers for all their help, but also our friend, general public, that has no sent well wishes, and everybody that was there that day worked really hard in extremely bad circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And the trauma that everybody went through, not only the families, but everybody involved that day, is something that you would not wish to happen again. And it's just like reliving the grief all over again.
Right. As you mentioned, you accept it's going to be a long process. Anne-Marie, were you pleased to hear at least there's some progress, or that the Gardaí have now sent their files to the DPP, or that maybe the investigation is moving on?
Yeah, we are. We are happy. We are happy with the input from the investigation team. And as I say, we knew it would be a long process, and we were just so happy to hear the update yesterday from the Gardaí team, who met with all of the families and have been always open to us asking questions, or if it's anything that we don't understand, that they're able to simplify and go through everything with us, which is which is good, which is good for us. But the only one thing that I will say is,
yes, Anne-Marie,
all the talk, there's talk in the media and talk saying that people are talking to families about different things, about memorials. That is not true. We're not being consulted. And we wanted to go with our counsellor and have her say, but we were closed down. We were silenced again. We couldn't put our views forward.
I hear what you're saying, Anne-Marie, yeah.
And nothing can happen without the input from people directly involved.
Mm-hmm. What you're referring to, Anne-Marie, is that Donegal County Council, there was a motion passed at a meeting yesterday calling on the executive to buy the site of the Chrysler tragedy, either by negotiation with the owner or a CPO, and then to sit down with families and design a memorial garden and to consult with you on how best that could be done. I asked, we at Liveline have asked Donegal County Council for comment on this, and they tell me in a statement that the council can confirm that this motion was passed by elected members in Donegal County Council at its meeting, a plenary meeting held in Lifford yesterday. And I know those meetings can be difficult because it's for the councillors to talk there, and I think you have to be invited to talk otherwise, from my experience of covering council meetings for many, many years. The council executive had presented a response read into the record of their meetings previously. They tell me, as I say, the motion was passed by members of Donegal County Council yesterday, and they've agreed to meet again, they tell me, in workshop format on the 20th of October in this matter. Anne-Marie making it very clear that families in Chrysler want to be consulted whatever happens going forward and in whatever ways any memorials or tributes are paid to their loved ones in Chrysler as well. Anya, I know that's very important to you too, because as you said, you're still living through the eyes of Bob and to Shauna, and continuing to miss them, which you always will. Do you feel Absolutely. They're close to you? Do you feel close to them, Anya? Because I know they're always on your mind, like for you, for Donna, for Anne-Marie, for anyone.
Yes, I do. I am. Every time there's a meeting, every time there's an interview, I ask Bob and Shauna for strength, and I feel I get that from both of them. Yes, I do feel they're near, and I do feel they're supporting me.
That's a good feeling in a bad situation, is it, Anya? Is it still something you can get comfort from there?
Well, it's something you can get comfort from, and the support from families and the 10 families and friends in Chrysler and the community as well.
Mm-hmm. And I know you're a comfort to each other as well, and very strong people. And Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for talking to us today. And my thoughts and my sympathies to everyone in Chrysler. Thank you to Donna Harper, to Anya Flanagan, to Anne-Marie Boyle there as well. And I want to recognise as well and to remember that the Chrysler explosion on October 7th, 2022 claimed the lives of 5-year-old Shauna Flanagan Garway and her father, Robert, described as Bob there, of course, by Anya, age 50, 14-year-old Leona Harper, and thanks to Donna, her mum, for talking to us there, 59-year-old Hugh Kelly, 24-year-old Jessica Gallagher, 49-year-old Martin McGill, 48-year-old James O'Flaherty, 49-year-old Martina Martin, and 39-year-old Catherine O'Donnell. Thanks to Anne-Marie, her sister, for telling us about Catherine and her 13-year-old son, James Monaghan. And may they never be forgotten, and indeed rest in peace. Our thoughts to everyone in Chrysler, to the victims, to those who have been injured, and to those who still suffer, of course, and struggle to come to terms with that terrible explosion. We're back shortly.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And Liveline at rte.ie. Frank, good afternoon.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well. And yourself?
Well, thank you for having me on. Quite difficult to follow that last article, you know, to be talking about anything somewhat materialistic with the tragedy that those people are still suffering.
Of course. Anyway. And I understand that, Frank. And thanks for mentioning it too. Our thoughts, obviously, to everyone in Chrysler and Donegal as well. We were asking people to get in touch about their budget issues and about anything else at all, because, of course, that's what we want to hear on Liveline. Tell me about your solar panels.
Okay, well, I came late to the whole solar panel thing. I've recently retired, so I decided, we'll do something. And the motivation of I've recently put in the solar panels, kind of doing one's bit for the environment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, financially, eventually, like the electricity bills come down pretty quick, but you have to, you know, balance that against the cost of doing the panels. But I was lucky in a sense when I went through, can I mention the name of the company?
Sure.
That I'm with? Yeah, when I went to Energia, I was already with Energia. I have a smart meter. I had the panels in, so I needed to try and take most advantage out of a pricing plan that would work for me, so a smart plan. But luckily, in a sense, the increases had been aired, you know, had been put out on media about a week ago that are to happen on the night, or about a week before I signed up with the Energia Smart Plan. And these are the increases happening on the 9th of October. So when I was speaking with the Energia people, and now, can I just absolutely qualify this, John, and say I've no issue with the Energia people.
Sure.
They were great. And I don't really think it matters which of the energy suppliers you were going to. It's all a trend.
But your bill is going up. And are your solar panels going to save you any money? That's what I'm wondering.
My bill is going up. The cost of everything goes up. It's going up because notionally the cost of generation, even though what's been charged in this country for electricity is 30% above the European average. And it's going up substantially. But the one that got me with regard to the reason being the cost of generation, I have the solar panels. And when I've ran my house, you know, as good as I can off the solar panels, I put electricity back into the grid. And I get paid for what I put back into the grid. Well, it gets offset against what I take from the grid.
Sounds good.
And I was getting, I am currently getting 20 cents per unit that goes back into the grid. But come the 19th of October, I'm only getting 18.5%. So they're justifying the price increase on the basis of the cost of generation. I'm part of the generation process, but they're paying me less for what I'm generating.
Mm-hmm. I get what you're saying.
It sounds.
You're going to pay more for electricity. They're going to pay you less for it. The Liveline team took up your issue here with Energia as well, who don't comment on individual customer accounts. And you can contact them again to discuss this further, they say. But in a statement, they say Energia can confirm its clean export guarantee payment for customers will change from 20 cent per kilowatt hour to 18.5 cent per kilowatt hour, effective from the 9th of October next week. The export rate will apply to all eligible residential customers with registered microgeneration installations who generate an electricity surplus and export it back to the grid. They say their microgeneration rate remains competitive and has been adjusted as part of a full review of all our tariffs. What do you think, Frank?
I just think, where's the incentive for people to keep buying into the green process and, you know, assisting in the generation and lowering the carbon footprint when every time, and even if you look at the grants given now for putting in solar panels, it's €1,800 now.
Yep.
It was somewhere around €2,500 not that long ago.
See your point, Frank.
Everything seems to be dropping.
Good to talk to you, and thanks for getting in touch. Liveline at rte.ie.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818 715 815.
And remember, we're in countdown to next Tuesday's budget. We want to hear from you. I've been putting a list together. We want to talk about your items for the Ministers for Finance and Public Expenditure. What do you want to hear from them? What do you need addressed urgently? Housing, childcare, we've been hearing about some of those things today. VAT, small business incentives, carers allowance, things like that. We want to know. 51551 087-484-8888 by WhatsApp and liveline at rte.ie, of course, for your emails. Kira, good afternoon.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, Kira. Was it you or your mum that was a big Dolly Parton fan?
Well, myself and my mum and my daughter, it's kind of a generational thing now.
Lovely.
And mum, when you were talking about Dolly Parton earlier on, my mum, she passed away in the hospice in January.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, well, it was, they were lovely in the hospice. They're amazing. And just before she actually, about 3 hours before she passed, it was just myself and my daughter there, and we were chatting to mum. Now, mum was asleep at this point. She she didn't wake up again. But we knew she could hear us, and we were chatting and talking, and she always had a great kind of a great love of country music and sassy country singers like Dolly. So we were playing a little bit of music, and we were playing some of the Dolly songs and singing along. And I suppose it sounds a bit silly when someone's about to pass away.
It doesn't sound a bit silly. It doesn't sound a bit silly, Ciara. You were playing songs to your late mom, Miriam, just as she was as passing away. Can I ask what song? Or do you, if you don't have to tell me.
Oh, sure. Oh, no, we were playing. We were playing. We were singing as well. Holly has a lovely voice. So we were singing. We were singing Here You Come Again. Do you know that one?
I do. It's one of the greats. One of the great Dolly Parton songs.
Yeah. And also, I have to say, there was some Tommy Wynette in there as well. But, you know.
Dolly'd forgive you for that, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Ciara, what a lovely memory to share. Thank you so much. And when you hear the piano music there on Here You Come Again, I'm sure you will always think of your mum, Miriam, and those lovely memories. May she rest in peace.
Always.
Thank you so much for sharing
with
us today. And to everyone who spoke to us on Liveline today. The programme was produced by Rachel Graham. Mark McGrath was on sound and Richie Byrne on research. My thanks to you for listening. Ray Darcy's up next from me, John Cook. Have a lovely afternoon.